Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
It's not a gift to me, it's a gift to the Department of Defense.
Grifting and grifting? That's what anti-corruption experts are charging. Over reports, Qatar is preparing to give President Trump a $400 million luxury plane known as the Flying Palace.
Corruption is orders of magnitude worse than Trump 1, which was already the worst in American history.
As President Trump lands in Saudi Arabia, then on to Qatar and the UAE, we'll speak with Robert Weissman of Public Citizen, the New York Times reporter Eric Lipton, who's exposed how Trump's two oldest sons are profiting from their dad's presidency, negotiating overseas deals worth billions of dollars. Then to Gaza, where Save the Children's warning every child is now at risk of famine due to Israel's 10-week-long blockade. We'll speak to an Oxfam representative in Gaza City, and then to Abu Bakr Abed, the 22-year-old Palestinian accidental war correspondent who we last spoke to in Gaza.
There's no food available. A lot of people are being taken to the hospital to receive treatment where doctors cannot really give the proper treatment for them, and the medications are not available. Israel has been blocking the two crossings, not allowing one single truck into Gaza. And that has really left people on the cusp of imminent death.
Today, Abu Bakr Abed joins us from Dublin, Ireland. His new piece for Dropsite is headlined, "The Unbearable Pain of Leaving Gaza." All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's continuing its assault on the Gaza Strip, with at least 46 Palestinians killed and 73 wounded over the past 24 hours. Among the dead, at least two people killed when Israel bombed the Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis. The strike killed photojournalist Hassan Islaya while he was receiving treatment for injuries he sustained in an airstrike last month. He's at least the 215th media worker killed in Gaza since October 2023. It's not the first time Israel's bombed Nasser Hospital. Israeli forces previously struck its emergency building, attacked tents for displaced people outside its gates, laid siege to the complex for over a week, and arrested scores of patients and medical staff. Since October 2023, Israeli forces have bombed or set fire to at least 35 hospitals across the Gaza Strip, each act a war crime. Many human rights groups and advocates charge under the 1949 Geneva Convention. On Monday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called for an end to Israel's total blockade of Gaza, in place since March 2nd, after a leading global hunger monitor said Gaza's entire population faces famine. This is UN spokesperson Stefan Dujarric.
Over 70 days into the blanket ban imposed by Israeli authorities on the entry of any supplies into Gaza, stocks have run out, bakeries have shut down, community kitchens are closing daily, and people are starving. This is not a natural disaster, but a human-made catastrophe that the world should not allow.
Hamas has released 21-year-old Israeli-American Eidan Alexander from captivity more than 580 days after the Israeli soldier was taken prisoner during Hamas's October 7, 2023 attack. Alexander reunited with his family in Israel Monday after the Trump administration secured his release in direct talks with Hamas. The deal was brokered by Trump's envoy, Steve Witkoff, sidelining Israeli negotiators who've refused to engage directly with Hamas over the remaining 21 captives still believed to be alive in Gaza. A Hamas official called Alexander's release a goodwill gesture aimed at securing a new ceasefire with Israel ahead of Trump's trip to the Middle East, which he began today. President Trump was greeted by Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman as he landed in Riyadh today, the first stop on a tour of Gulf states that will also take him to Qatar and the United Arab Emirates. Trump's expected to discuss Iran's nuclear program, oil prices, and Gaza. He's also expected to focus on securing major investments with the three countries, which Trump claims could reach $1 trillion. This includes a reported arms deal with Saudi Arabia for more than $100 billion. Dozens of business leaders are in Riyadh for Trump's visit. Among them are billionaire CEOs Elon Musk and his brother, OpenAI's Sam Altman, BlackRock's Larry Fink, and Palantir's Alex Karp. Ahead of Trump's first major overseas trip, over 800 U.S. health workers called on Trump to demand a new ceasefire in Gaza and immediately allow aid to enter the Gaza Strip. The medical workers highlighted the increased risks to children, pregnant women, sick, and older Palestinians, whom they say are, quote, marching in an agonizing and cruel fashion toward death, unquote. The Department of Homeland Security said it's terminating temporary protected status, TPS, for thousands of Afghans living in the U.S. in just 2 months. DHS Secretary Kristi Noem cited the improved security situation in Afghanistan, but advocacy groups hit back at the suggestion it would be safe for Afghans to return, many of whom were granted TPS because they assisted U.S. forces during the U.S. occupation of Afghanistan. In related news, the Episcopal Church is ending a long-standing partnership with the federal government and refusing to help resettle white South Africans who've been granted refugee status in the U.S. The Episcopal Church cited its, quote, commitment to racial justice and reconciliation, unquote. Some 60 white South Africans arrived in the U.S. Monday as refugees, even though that program has been suspended for all other groups. President Trump said Monday he'll likely speak with Chinese President Xi Jinping in the coming days after the White House announced a deal to temporarily reduce Trump's tariffs on Chinese goods from 145% to 30%. The announcement set off a stock market rally on Monday led by tech stocks, including Amazon, Tesla, and Apple. Meanwhile, the Colombian president, Gustavo Petro, said Monday his nation will join the Belt and Road Initiative, China's massive global infrastructure development project. Petro spoke from the Great Wall of China ahead of a summit of Latin American and Caribbean leaders in Beijing. In an opening address earlier today, President Xi pledged lines of credit worth 66 billion yuan, equivalent to more than 9 billion U.S. dollars.
关税战.
There are no winners in tariff wars and trade wars. Bullying and tyranny will only isolate oneself. China and Latin America and Caribbean countries are important members of the global South. Independence and self-reliance are our glorious traditions. Development and revitalization are our natural rights.
President Trump signed an executive order Monday directing U.S. drug makers to cut their prices by up to 80%. But the order doesn't include any enforcement mechanisms, and pharmaceutical stocks rose following the news and amidst relief within the industry. In a social media post, Trump invoked his most favored nation plan that he unsuccessfully tried to enact in his first term, which aims to bring U.S. drug prices in line with other wealthy countries. Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders responded, quote, if Trump is serious about making real change rather than just issuing a press release, he'll support legislation I will soon be introducing to make sure we pay no more for prescription drugs than people in other major countries. If Republicans and Democrats come together on this legislation, we can get it passed in a few weeks, Sanders said. President Trump's fired the head of the U.S. Copyright Office, Shira Perlmutter. Her office had just released a report warning of the risks of using generative AI on copyrighted creative materials. Her firing comes just days after President Trump fired the woman who hired her, Librarian of Congress Carla Hayden. An outbreak of measles that began among unvaccinated people in Texas has grown to over 1,000 cases across 11 U.S. states. So far, three people have died of the vaccine-preventable disease, two children and an adult, with dozens more hospitalized. On Monday, Maryland Senator Angela Alsobrooks filed a no-confidence resolution calling on Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to resign, in part because of Kennedy's repeated false claims about the safety and efficacy of vaccines. Alsobrooks filed the resolution after leading a rally Saturday of hundreds of protesters outside the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, many of them recently fired workers.
Since Donald Trump has taken office, NIH has fired 1,300 employees and canceled more than $2 billion in federal research grants. How awful, how shameful. And he wants to cut the NIH by another 40%. Please know that these cuts would be carried out under the ridiculous leadership of RFK Jr., our asinine HHS secretary.
Over the weekend, Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. revealed he took his grandchildren for a swim in Washington, D.C.'s Rock Creek. Despite clear and longstanding public health warnings of high bacterial levels that make the waterway unsafe, California Governor Gavin Newsom is escalating his crackdown on the state's unhoused, again calling on California cities and counties to sweep and ban encampments. Governor Newsom said he's allocated $3.3 billion to help localities enact the ban.
It is time to take back the streets. It's time to take back the sidewalks. It's time to take these encampments and provide alternatives. And the state is giving you more resources than ever. And it's time, I think, to just end the excuses.
There are some 187,000 unhoused people in California, according to the latest data. Housing advocates warn criminalizing homelessness will only compound the issue and slam Governor Newsom for focusing on the failed model of forced drug and mental health treatment while failing to address the core issues of housing shortages and skyrocketing housing costs. And in Mexico, a mayoral candidate and four of her supporters were killed Sunday when shots rang out at a campaign rally in the eastern state of Veracruz. Yesenia Lara Gutierrez was running for mayor of Texistepec in Mexico's June 1st election as a member of the Morena Party. Witnesses reported hearing about 20 gunshots.
A very cruel injustice, right? Texistepec used to be peaceful. Now look at the result. So much injustice, so many killings.
Sunday's assassination came just 2 days after mass gunmen shot and killed Cecilia Rubalcaba, a municipal council member in Jalisco. Last year, political violence in Mexico surged to an all-time high, with human rights groups reporting 661 attacks on people and facilities. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump was greeted by Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman as he landed in Riyadh today on the first stop of his major trip of his second term. He'll then head to Qatar and the United Arab Emirates. Trump is pushing for Saudi Arabia to invest over $1 trillion in the United States and sign new arms deals. Executives traveling on the trip include the world's richest man and Trump advisor, Elon Musk, also his brother, BlackRock CEO Larry Fink, Citigroup CEO Jane Fraser, Palantir's Alex Karp, and OpenAI CEO Sam Altman. Ahead of the trip, President Trump confirmed reports that the royal family of Qatar may soon give him a $400 million luxury 747 plane known as the Flying Palace to temporarily replace Air Force One. ABC News reports the plane may be the most valuable gift ever given to the United States from a foreign government. According to multiple press reports, the plane would be initially given to the Air Force, which will need to spend millions to refurbish it. The plane will later be donated to President Trump's presidential library, meaning Trump could continue using the plane after he leaves office. On Monday, President Trump defended Qatar's offer.
It's not a gift to me. It's a gift to the Department of Defense.
We're joined now by Robert Weissman, co-president of Public Citizen. President Trump just said, Rob, this is not a gift to me. This is a gift to the Air Force. Your response?
Yeah, it's not a gift to the Air Force. It's not a gift to the American people. It's a very personal gift to Donald Trump, designed, as everyone can see, to buy influence and ongoing access with the president of the world's most powerful nation. It is almost certainly the most corrupt deal in all of American history. Part of the plan, as you mentioned, is that he'll use it as Air Force One and then keep access to it after he leaves the presidency, which he is going to do at the end of this term, for his personal use. Never been anything like this before. It plays perfectly to Trump. It's not just a large gift. It is, as you said, described as a palace in the sky. So plays into his love for the ornate, the opulent, and the regal. And it is, to say it is unconstitutional is to understate the scale of this corruption.
Rob Weissman, if you can also talk about, I mean, it's $400 million so-called gift. But then the Air Force would have to pour in millions. Explain.
Right. Well, this is made to be a palace in the sky, but it's not made to be Air Force One. So all of the national security devices and protections that have to be built into the plane would have to be built into this so-called gift. So it's a huge waste of taxpayer assets. It's not clear how much time Trump would be able to use it while in the presidency. Reports are it would take years to do that upgrade. And by the time it's upgraded, it may be time to move on to the next president. So it is, for an administration that claims to care about efficiency, which is obviously a lie, this is yet another indication that that is just a nonsensical claim, a sop that they throw out there. It is the most wasteful and inefficient administration probably in American history. That this is a small piece of that, is a tiny part of this problem. The core problem here is the core corruption that this embodies, and it is fundamental to understanding what this Trump administration is all about.
It's a number of Republicans who are raising serious questions about this. You have Senator Hawley, who's saying, why can't this big, beautiful plane be from the United States? In fact, Trump worked a deal to get two Boeing planes. What's happened to them as Air Force One?
Right. So this actually is a Boeing plane, but it's owned by Qatar, which would then gift it to him. You're right that lots of Republicans, even they, are saying, hey, this is a step too far. Right-wing commentators like Laura Loomer and Ben Shapiro are denouncing it, which gives you some indication of how outrageous it is. It is a direct violation of the U.S. Constitution's Emoluments Clause, which says the president cannot accept gifts from foreign nations. And it is also the case, as you said, that there already are more Boeings on the way. They are slow. Boeing is a company that is not doing well now and is messing this up, apparently, as it's messing up so much more. But it does take a long time to build Air Force One, in part because everyone who's even making a part for the plane is required to undergo a national security background. In the same way, it'll take a long time to upgrade this plane if, in fact, the gift is made to Donald Trump.
Qatar, dubbed indispensable for U.S. military operations, recently extended its defense cooperation agreement with Washington, yet signed a beachside villa resort deal with the Trump Organization. Can you talk about the significance of this deal, Rob?
Everything about the trip that Trump is on right now should be understood as about personal grift, first, and secondarily about potential U.S. interests. So Trump is accepting this plane. He and his family business are looking to make so-called investments in the UAE and Qatar. They're not really investments. They're just licensing deals where they're paid to let their name be plastered on golf courses and towers. He also has his cryptocurrency businesses and just accepted a deal that's going to purchase $2 billion of his crypto for no reason at all, except to gift some portion of that to Trump. So there's a lot of money flowing in to this presidency personally. the first Trump administration was the most corrupt in American history by far. What's going on now is literally orders of magnitude worse. You know, in the first administration, we were upset about the Trump Hotel and people in foreign governments taking out hotel rooms they didn't need at $800 or $1,200 a night. Now they're making deals for $400 million a pop. It is quite something, and it is both a degradation of the presidency, but more fundamentally, it's a corruption of the office, meaning foreign policy or policy in general is for sale in this administration. If you want to get an outcome, find a way to get some money directly to the president and his family, and you got a good chance to get what you want.
And very quickly, on the executive order he just signed before his trip to require drug companies to decrease their prices within 30 days, which sounds like a very good thing, make them so they're not more expensive drugs than in other parts of the world, you're contending he will just pick up the prices and this will benefit drug companies in the rest of the industrialized world.
Right. It's a good tagline, and it would be a good policy if it were his policy. As you said, Bernie Sanders supports it. Public Citizen supports it. The idea that the U.S. shouldn't pay more for drugs than other rich countries around the world. Donald Trump could push that policy forward by supporting legislation in Congress, which would pass in no time if he said he supported it, or even using his own existing tools. He's not doing that. He just signed an executive order which said, please don't make us pay more, which no drug company is going to follow. But what he also said is the rest of the world should pay more to raise their prices to be more like the United States. So the practical impact of what he's going to do is going to be to raise prices overseas. Meanwhile, Republicans in Congress aren't trying to lower prices. They're trying to extend monopoly protections to make the prices paid by Medicare more expensive. So the drug companies are going to come out pretty well from this deal, even though they're pretty scared of what might happen. What seems to actually be happening is going to benefit their bottom line, hurt the rest of us.
Rob Weissman, I want to thank you for being with us, co-president of Public Citizen. Coming up, New York Times reporter Eric Lipton on how President Trump's two oldest sons, Don and Eric, are profiting from their father's presidency, negotiating overseas deals worth billions of dollars. Stay with us. Exit Only by Deerhoof, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Trump heads to the Middle East with a single goal, deals, deals, deals. That's the headline of a New York Times piece our next guest contributed to as he follows the dealings of the Trump administration. Eric Lipton is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter with the New York Times, where his latest pieces are headlined, Auction to Dine with Trump Creates Foreign Influence Opportunity, and Trump's Son's Deals on Three Continents Directly Benefit the President. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Eric Lipton. Well, why don't you start there? We're looking at this first major international trip President Trump is taking. First stop, Riyadh. We're looking at the line of American CEOs and others who are shaking the hands of Mohammed bin Salman and President Trump, very prominently, of course, the richest man in the world, Elon Musk, the Trump ally. If you can talk about who is behind the trip? You can talk about the advising of Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, and what all of them, and who we aren't seeing right now, Eric and Donald Trump, have to gain.
Well, the Middle East is the nexus of the Trump organization's global business operations at the moment. It's really their single most important profit center by far. And it relates to the fact that there is such enormous wealth there. It's the oil and gas revenues over many decades have been stuffed into the sovereign wealth funds. And the sovereign wealth funds are now looking to expand their engagement globally to become more prominent economic players in the world. And so that's the reason that there are so many, you know, venture capitalists and artificial intelligence or technology companies that are heading to the Middle East. And it's the same reason that the Trumps and Jared Kushner are so tied to the Middle East, because they have hundreds of billions of dollars to give out. And that's the reason that so many American corporations are in the Middle East with President Trump right now. So for the Trump family, they have $2 billion worth of capital that in the last several weeks, the government of Abu Dhabi announced that it was going to put into World Liberty Financial, their cryptocurrency company. And that will pass through World Liberty on its way to Binance, the largest crypto exchange in the world. But while that money resides with World Liberty, the Trump family and its partners will be making interest off of that $2 billion. So we're talking tens of millions of dollars a year. Similarly, not very far away in Qatar, as your prior guest was referencing, the government there is the landowner on a property where the Trump family is going to be doing a golf and villas. And many of these projects in the Middle East are coordinated with a company called Dar Global, which is a subsidiary of Dar Al Arkan, which is a Saudi-based real estate company that's closely aligned with the government of Saudi Arabia. And Dar Global has six different real estate projects with the Trump family, which basically are branding projects where the Trump name is, as you know, Robert Wiseman indicated, is put on these projects. The Trumps get millions of dollars in branding fees, and then they often get licensing and managing fees as well. So they have projects in Saudi Arabia, in Oman, in the United Arab Emirates with Dar Global. And that's where their biggest growth chunk of the Trump real estate operations are, through Dar Global and these branding projects. And so, you know, when I looked at the list of who's attending the Saudi meetings today, I didn't see anyone from Dar Global listed, although they may be there. And I didn't see their other business partners listed as being present. But just being in that space is good for the president being there, is good for Jared Kushner. Jared Kushner has more than $2 billion in funds from the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, which went into his private equity firm. And then similarly, the Public Investment Fund is the single biggest investor in LIV Golf, which has played four tournaments in a row at the Trump family's Doral golf course in Florida. And so the money from the Middle East is just in so many different ways, in crypto, in golf, in hotels, and Jared Kushner are flowing into Trump family operations. And so it's not surprising that this is a big trip that the president has taken to visit UAE, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia, three business partners of the Trump family.
So talk more about Eric and Donald Trump. In the first administration, we saw them all the time. They were front and center. But right now, we're not seeing them. You write an article, maybe that's because they're making deals on three continents that directly benefit the president, but also the financial relationship between President Trump and his two older sons.
I mean, Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner were in the White House in the first term, but Don Jr. and Eric Trump were never a part of the administration. They were part of the political operation, and they have always been a part of the political operation. So in terms of their visibility and presence in the second term, I don't see that much difference for Don Jr. and Eric. I mean, they are very active, and they are, you know, Eric Trump was just in Dubai giving a speech at the crypto event. And then he similarly was with Dar Global having a grand celebration of the start of the Dubai Trump International Hotel project that's on sale there now for, you know, more than, you know, I think it's $12 million for some of the top condos there. So they are, and, you know, Don Jr. is going to be in Vegas for a Bitcoin conference, and he's going to be in Qatar next week as well for another conference. And so they are out there, and Don Jr. is opening up a new club in Washington. He's a part owner of something called the Executive Branch, which is, you know, obviously named after the White House, that's paying, you know, you're going to cost you $500,000 a person to get a membership. And David Sachs, the president's crypto advisor, is one of the founding members. And Jeff Miller, a lobbyist who has dozens of clients that he's gotten since Trump started. He's a big fundraiser for Trump, is also one of the founding members. And Don Jr., the son of the president, is one of the owners. So Don will be present at that venue in Georgetown once it opens. So I've seen a lot of Don and Eric, similar to what I saw in the first term. The difference is that they are much bolder in their deal making right now than they were in Trump's first term, where they were a little more shy about pursuing profits as aggressively as they now are. There's very little restraint at the moment. They're just